Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back my really good friends, Wendy Sweet. She's always so sweet and she's smiling. And her brother, Bill Fairman. Hi, Wendy. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Mike.
Great to see you again, Mike.
It's funny when people introduce other people on podcasts, they always say, oh, this is my really good friend or my dear friend, and they really aren't. But we really are good friends.
Yes, we've been good friends for a long, long time. And it's kind of, every time I talk to you, I smile because you're always so sweet.
That's well, it's a little bit different when you're her brother.
Yeah, he doesn't think so.
She's not quite as sweet all the time.
Well, maybe to you sometimes. You know what? You know how it is. If she's sweet and nice to everyone else, she needs somebody to a little, you know.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, to take out the whip and kind of a little bit of an internal politics, let me put it this way.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, we do make people in the office nervous.
We just threatened to tell our mother.
Let's jump straight into just a couple of words about family, how's family, how things are going, how the boys, Wendy, they're working hard. Just a couple of quick, what's new in the world of Wendy and Bill?
Well, you know, for me, and we talked a little bit about this before we even got the camera on, is, you know, what we want is for our children to be happy and moving forward. And they are. So I'm thrilled about that. They're both employed. And one of them actually works for us. He's our project manager on some stuff. So
that's wonderful.
We're really thrilled to see
them. He built this wooden thing behind us as well.
So yeah.
Looks like we're in an old cabin.
Yeah. But it's really cool too. I was telling Bill a couple weeks ago that I was standing in the kitchen making breakfast and my two boys were also standing in the kitchen. They were talking about self-directed IRAs and what you can and cannot do with it. And I'm standing there going, wow, this just warms the cockles of my heart that my children are talking about that and interested in how they're going to invest their money. Yeah. And I thought, gosh, it did rub off. So I was really glad about that.
You've done something right? You've educated them, obviously brought them well and given them good education. At the end of the day, you know, the most important thing that parents can do for their kids, and you know, of course, give them love and all that stuff. But it's not money. Don't give them money.
Educate. That's right.
The best thing you can do is educate. And as long
That's
as
right.
they're educated, as long as they know how to learn, and they can earn their own living.
At the end of the day,
that's the best thing you can do.
That's
give them
right.
love, give them education, and then make them good people. That's it. The rest,
they'll
figure it out on their own.
Well, financial education for our young people is the most important.
They don't get it.
I'm not getting political here, but when you can't get it from public education,
it
has to come from the parents. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if you have a situation where both parents are working and they don't have time to help with that portion of their mm-hmm. education, that's why we have so many people that are financially illiterate and get themselves into trouble and buy stuff that they want on credit versus buying stuff that will make them an income on credit.
Right.
Yeah, give them Rich Dad Poor Dad book and give them some educational self-directed IRA or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. The schools don't provide financial education. I don't even know what schools do. Of course, they educate science.
They babysit.
Yeah, if you take some of the politically challenged ideas or some of the craziness that's been going on, I don't want to put it any other way. When I came to this country, I'm still shocked, and I mean this with all due respect, when they ask a question, is it he or she? I mean, it's at birth, right? You don't go through this discussion. And today,
yeah,
people try to make a decision. Like, this stuff drives me insane, and I can't believe it. We even spending time, energy, and discussions on all this stuff. So the schools
are so right.
Worried about that. Yes, math, engineering, science, financial education, etc. All that stuff should be what schools teach. But let's leave it. I mean, let's go into real estate, because this we can debate all day long. Unfortunately, there's very little we can do about that. And depending where you live, some states and cities are more conservative. Some are more
not.
I live in New York City. That's all I'm going to say. Education here is a little, a little too much, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe good science, but a little bit too much of some other stuff. So. All right. Let's go into real estate. So what's going on in the Carolinas? You guys are running, obviously, Carolina hard money, lending capital on hard money deals. Well, we do know a couple of things. Right before the call, we were chatting about, yesterday. We're recording this in mid-March, late second half of March. I met up with Eric Goodman in Manhattan. He's like you, hard money lender in New York City. And one of the basic observations is that the banks have tightened up their lending completely. In this environment, bank credit is super tight, inverted yield curve, the troubled balance sheets, many regional lenders, smaller banks, and regional banks who are the fundamental providers of the capital for real estate are pulling out. They've pulled out. They are just so squeezed. So private credit has come in as the resolution, as a solution. In fact, what's really interesting, and I'll shut up in a second, let you talk about this. A really good friend, and she was on a podcast. Her podcast just came out, Frances Newton Stacy. And she said that who substituted tight bank credit and who is letting this economy chug along? We should be in a recession, but we are not. And there's a reason for this, because bank credit is tight. Fed hiked rates, they tightened the bank credit, but they can't stop the private enterprise and the private
That's
credit
right.
saving the country. You guys are saving the country. You're providing capital where the capital is not available from the banks. So let's talk about your experience in private lending.
Well, let me add on to that. It's not us that's saving the economy. It's investors that are willing to invest in companies like ours, because otherwise we wouldn't have the capital to make these loans.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe in real estate as well, as long as we're our assumptions are correct. Real estate is always going to be a good security.
And we use the right formula, the right numbers, lending at the right loan to value. That's so important to stay conservative in that respect. But for us, it was a tough year last year, very slow. Everybody's just wondering what's going on. The rates started hiking up and even real estate sales slowed. In the Southeast, we haven't seen prices drop. In fact, we've actually seen them still increase 1 to 2%. But the selling time frame has slowed down a lot. This is in the single family residential area. So we've seen that slowdown. And when I say slowdown, it went from like a week being on the market, and that would be long, to, 60 to 90 days is not uncommon. But the prices have remained pretty strong. So we're really, really glad about that. But really, since January 1st, I think people are kind of fed up of waiting. So we've seen on the investor end, a lot of people coming back for loans, finding more deals. We're seeing that change a little bit. Now, as far as the commercial side, we fill a niche that the banks aren't touching, right?
Yeah, and before we get into commercial, I want to stay on residential a little bit. Our business is fix and flips, buy and hold that still need work, and then
new construction.
Custom homes. And The construction part has really picked up because the lack of inventory for existing properties. That's a big issue nationwide, and that's one of the reasons prices have stayed elevated, mm-hmm. is because there's a lack of inventory. Mm-hmm. There's still a demand for single family housing, and you know, the builders can't keep up with the demand. So 2023 was the first time in literally decades that the new construction was above 10% as the average sales. The last half of 2003, it was like 12.5% of all home sales were new construction. And that just goes to show you, the issue with existing homes. And then the builders can't keep up because, and this is a debate, but it's true, there's municipalities that make you jump through so many hoops to develop new housing developments. You have the, you know, NIMBYism, the not in my backyard thing. You have municipalities pushing more towards we'll call it condensed communities.
Yeah.
So they're pushing towards more high rise, more
multifamily
HUD type developments. Mm-hmm. And I understand this. They get more tax money per acre when they're pushing everybody together. Although it's like the electric car thing. You're forcing people to build stuff that there's not a demand for. But that said, that's one of the reasons you're going to see single family homes stay at relatively high prices, no matter what these rates are, because there's just not enough of them out there, and it's a supply and demand thing. On the commercial side, you know, we're in a specific niche. We try to stay under $3 million in value. So when we're dealing with multifamily, self-storage, and retail strip centers, they're going to be smaller niche properties, which traditionally your local banks were handling these. And you're right, they're not doing this because I think too many of them had commercial office space or other specialty type properties in their portfolios. And now that the economy is slowing a little bit and they're getting some of these back, they're starting to go into default because they have to refinance because their loans are due. Mm-hmm. And now their rates are twice as high as they were before. They're not mm-hmm. qualifying. We've had three large office towers in Charlotte since last summer go into receivership. One of them has Wells Fargo on the side of it.
Yeah.
Now, Wells Fargo doesn't own the building.
Right.
They're just a tenant. But they decided to move to a new office building.
Smaller.
No bigger, but newer.
I thought it was the one across the street that's smaller.
They were moving out of the smaller one into the bigger one. Hmm. You remember the Tower of Power, we used to call it? We have an energy company that had their name on this new building, and they moved out. And we used to call it the Tower of Power because all the lights on it. Anyway, they've moved out, and now 80% of the tenant space in that building is vacant. So,
I just love a couple of things. So, Tower of Power reminds me Tower of Terror. Now it's a Tower of Terror with 80% of tenants gone, right?
That is a Tower of Terror for sure.
By the way, this is the sad reality. Many cities are going to have this issue. And it's the big cities like New York and a smaller city like Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Problem is still the same, especially if an older building and a tenant wants to move to a newer built office space, Class A, like you said, like Wells Fargo moved. The old building is it's a ghost. It's a Tower of Terror, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, you have fewer people working in offices now. So,
which doesn't make sense that they'd move into a bigger building.
Well, it's because a lot of people aren't occupying this space,
yeah.
and they're able to get deals now.
Yeah.
And then, the older buildings are going to be the ones that are suffering because they're not going to be able to make up the difference. What's really hot in office space are the types of developments where it's a mixed use, where you have, live work kind of communities, where you have a mix of single family, multifamily, office space, retail space, restaurants, all in a, you know, 2-block radius.
Those
things are still thriving.
Yeah, they're doing well. And they're coming up all over the place. In the Southeast, they're building that stuff like crazy. But the regional banks are not renewing people's loans. They're not renewing their commercial loans.
Yeah, they're under a lot of pressure.
Can't tell you how many people are coming to us that, you know, would, you know, they're in a 6-7% interest rate, happy to get a 10 or 11% interest rate or higher, because they just can't renew that 20-year note that renews every 5 years. They're in a world of hurt.
Hold this thought. Let's dissect a little bit, a couple of things that you said. So I'll add some comments and then we will move on. So we'll talk about this in just a second. But first comment was what you said originally. We have a substantial shortage of single family residential housing. I was listening to a podcast episode. It was D.R. Horton. They were dissecting D.R. Horton, one of the largest builders, and why their stock is still a good growth stock. And the story is still very consistent with what you said. Limited supply, not enough. Country needs about at least 1.5 million new homes per year just to stay on a break-even basis, because 400,000 gets destroyed per year or gets demolished, removed, and 1.1 million is kind of the population growth. And then we are behind, I don't know, 3 or 4 million at minimum behind. So we have multiple years of catch up. The challenge is, even if you push construction to 1.8 million units per year, just as an example, you're only catching up 300,000 a year. We need to catch up to 3 to 4 million. So on a grand scale of things, single family residential new construction is solid because demand is super solid. Supply is very limited, hard to build. There are limitations. They talked about, even in the construction space, a certain part of equipment they can't get, like transformers, some other stuff. It's limited supply. As a result, you can only build so much. You can't go faster than that maximum capacity per se. And then that will continue to be solid foundation for many years of single family construction, right? So I'll add the comment, because you said the price is staying solid despite high interest rates. Yeah, demand is hurt. Affordability is hurt massively with high interest rates. But the supply is, of course, fixed in essence, where the growth supply is very, very limited. Now, let's go into what you just described on the maturities cliff. So we just heard from you, and I assume these are regional or small community banks that are not extending these loans because they need money back, because they have problems with their balance sheets and their boards are telling them don't extend. And then the borrowers wind up in a terrible situation where the rates are up a lot. So how are they refinancing? Do they have to bring a lot more equity? Do they have to raise a lot of equity? Well, if they're coming to you and a bank loan was, I'm using an example, $2 million, right? And the rate was 6.5%. And they're coming to you, are you giving them back $2 million and you're just checking up the rate to, you're a hard money lender. I mean this with all due respect. You are offering them market rate at what, 11%, 12%? And what, are you giving the same $2 million?
They're having to bring money to the table because the ratios don't work at that interest rate. So they're having to come up with cash to get it refinanced. And that's happening to so many people. I'm seeing it.
What if they can't?
What if they can't, then they're going to lose the property. I mean, and that's what's sad.
So you cannot give them a loan because you need them to bring more down payment, more equity, more whatever you call it. You won't do even private loan because the rate is higher, obviously. And then the leverage may be a little too high for you. You're trying to cut the leverage. And if they can't get your loan and the banks is not extending them, what happens? I heard the bank's going to do extend and pretend because they don't have a choice. Otherwise,
well, hopefully. Yeah, hopefully. I know a lot of people are turning to private money as well. They're going outside even the hard money sectors, excuse me, looking for private money. You know, maybe it'll be a fund that they start or some sort of a syndication to try to bridge that gap that's in there. You know, maybe they'll give up a piece of equity to do that. Yeah, I don't know.
There's room in there for individuals that or groups that can do mezzanine financing to make up the gap. And then, you know, in turn, they're going to get obviously a little bit higher rate, but more likely they're going to get a piece of the equity. Mm-hmm. Listen, these retail strip centers, for example, we're obviously not doing any loans on office space. We're just
right.
completely staying away from that. The yeah. only commercial that we do is multifamily, self-storage, retail strip center, and then the occasional light industrial warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Flex space, we like that
too. Those properties are still fairly liquid. And for example, the strip center, those are businesses that are not affected by e-commerce like Amazon. You know, Amazon can't deliver you hot coffee. They can't do your hair. They can't do your nails. You know, they can't do your taxes. Those are local businesses that are viable. And they're, for the most part, those businesses are going to be recession resistant. So those properties are producing an income. That's not the problem. The problem is that now with a new higher rate, it's harder for them to get to qualify.
Yeah.
And if you raise the rents on all these folks as soon as you can, then mm-hmm. you're going to have people moving out. So
yeah.
it's kind of a catch 22. Mm-hmm. But you can offer equity for the mezzanine financing to make up the gap. And it will turn out good in the end, because at some point those values will start coming back up, because they still have to keep market rates for the tenants. You just can't. Probably most of these leases are 3 to 5 years, so it's hard to jack them up.
But
yearly.
It's a matter of how long can you hold on,
right? And that's what it is. It's a bridge.
Yeah, funny that you said these things, guys. So not sure if you know, but we are launching our new fund, which is a mass fund. It's exactly what to fill the gap, exactly that gap.
Smart.
To provide essentially called mass financing, mass debt, or mass equity or preferred equity on deals that just need liquidity. Otherwise, they can't bridge the gap. And some of these deals need liquidity to finish value at work, multifamily ones.
Right.
Right. And that's the so I'm 100% in agreement with you. From market conditions, these higher for longer rates are creating these significant pressures. Either floating rate debt is choking these deals because the rates are up, or maturity cliffs. They both wind up in the same position where they need more capital. And you either go to your investors, you try capital call, and good luck with that. That's been super,
yeah.
super tough, right? And then or you go raise mass, which basically pushes all previous money back. It winds up in a second position on the capital stack. But at least you get these projects to the finish line. And what the finish line is, a stabilization, hopefully. And then two, interest rates. Maybe
right.
the hope and the prayer. I don't know, hope is not a good strategy, but a lot of people are. It's almost like you got everybody addicted to very low interest rates. You push the rates up so much so fast, and now they're all praying for these rates to come down, but they really can't. You know what's the crazy part? And I've talked about this so many times, is that I hate to put it, but I for commercial real estate, we need a general recession. And I mean yeah. this with all due respect. I don't want unemployment at 10%, but unemployment at 3.8, 3.9 needs to be 4.5. A little bit of a recession, just enough for the Fed
right.
to actually wake up and cut those damn rates.
Right.
Yes, there will be some pain. Yes, some people will lose jobs, and it's terrible. I'm not supporting that idea, other than we need it because the recession is long overdue. And if you don't have a recession, the Fed can't really cut rates because they got this inflation that's kind of chugging along. So
that's right.
Let's go back to you. Where do you see opportunities? Obviously, mass financing, like you said. You guys continue to provide mostly first lien loan. Do you go into mass at all? Do you ever do anything in the mass, or you really are one trick pony? First, by the way, all the asset classes you mentioned, I completely agree with you and support. Really easy to understand, simple. Obviously, residential, easy to understand, steady eddy. Then you got multifamily, which is easy to understand, storage, light industrial, open air shopping, all these things. We love those asset classes. They're fundamentally strong. Now, financial capital stack may be a little messed up with the rates being so high, but that's not a property problem. It's a financing problem. So I'm just
right.
curious, what are you seeing in the opportunity? What are you doing? Are you doing only first lien loan, or you're venturing a little bit beyond that into preferred? Any other interesting ideas?
Well, we are not doing anything other than first lien loans. We will do second mortgages
If we're
if
in the
the loan to
first.
value is really within what we would do for the first lien loan in the first place.
And we have to know
And
who's in the first,
yeah.
and or it needs to be us.
And 99% of the cases, we're doing second liens behind our own first because it took a little bit longer or took a little bit more money to finish the project out. And it's easier than modifying a loan
But we
to
like
give
to
them a
keep
second.
things simple. We're very risk averse, and we don't mind being vanilla. We don't mind not being that sexy thing out that's the newest thing out. We'd like to sleep easy and kind of really stay in our lane. We're very much into the single family flip, fix and flip, and the new construction. And we're in an area where that's doing really well, and we see that continuing. And so we're going to ride that pony as long as we can, and stay in a safer place for us and our investors.
For me, the opportunities are those property types, but investing in them as a lender, not as an owner. Because your typical investor, as an owner, you get great tax benefits. Don't get me wrong, you get the upside when they appreciate. But as a lender, you don't have the responsibility of ownership. You don't have the tenants, the toilets, the trash, the taxes, maintenance, all that stuff. Liability. No bank has ever been sued for a slip and fall incident. And you're always into the deal for 50 to 70% of the value. So you're always in it for less risk than the people that actually own the property itself.
Now we invest in other stuff that's outside of that. We invest in oil and gas, and we've got, well, I am, and we do other things ourselves because we want to be diverse. And we like being in things that are a little bit higher risk, what we think is higher risk. But for us and what we do, we want to keep the people that we're responsible for in a
Singles and doubles.
we're not hitting for the home run and swinging for the home run, although we've hit them every now and again. We don't mind singles and doubles
And we've hit foul balls
all
before
day
too.
long. So let's talk about what you're doing. I'd love to hear more about your fund that you're talking about for the mezzanine.
Sure. So thanks, guys, for sharing your wisdom. And these are the words of the wise. Kiss fury, keep it simple, sir. Simple first lien loan business with, as you said, a little bit of seconds behind your own first is a very easy business on the asset classes that you understand well. All these principles are most fundamental principles. You invest in what you understand, hopefully the people who you know, and into the capital stack that lets you sleep at night. The complexities do arise, market conditions change, and we've seen swapping changes in the insurance industry with rates hiking. And it's not, if you're a lender, it affects you way less than an owner. Insurance is
That's
up
right.
for the owner, but you as a lender, listen, just pay my mortgage. So I'm 100% with you on that. I'll just say a couple of things about what we're doing on the mess side, and I'm not going to go too much because this episode is getting long, and people can learn more about this through other means. We see exactly the opportunity as you described. Primarily with some of the folks we worked in the past and the deals that we already know, they need additional capital because higher for longer rates. It's one of the major drivers. Of course, there are other factors. Just to be very clear, we see the same things. You get into these value-add projects, renovations, or multifamily and whatnot, they wind up taking quite often more dollars and take longer, and sometimes complexities hit. You run into property that needs heavy reposition. You got to evict some difficult tenants, and then you got to reposition it, or construction's costing you longer, more, or it's taking longer time to get the right contractors, or inflation in the cost of materials, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then when the Fed pushed rates so much so fast, some of the projects for 21, from 21 and 22, and some even earlier,
right,
they might end up in this position where they raised capital with a certain set of expectations, and very few people in 21 and 22, especially early part, even late part of 22, you knew Fed was going to do their thing, but how much they did and how fast and all these side effects were just very difficult to predict.
Right.
And, honestly, I still go back and I think that Fed, that historically, what they've trained us all to do is they hike slow and cut fast. That's been the norm, mm-hmm. right? Recession, cut fast, get it over with. Here, they've seen the inflation was so much of a black swan event. And you go back, it's the COVID, how COVID response from the government, the policy of shutdowns, the policies of helicopter money, so much
yeah.
money injected into the system, all caused inflation, and the Fed had no choice but to react. They could have done it way slower, but they still went aggressive. All that caused, you know, where we are today. Now, where we find ourselves is the fact that these projects just need capital. And they call it liquidity pressure. You can call it whatever you want to call it. Yeah, you also have maturity cliff, like you said. So maturity cliff is another exercise where the banks might still want to get repaid, but what if they can't? The borrower just tells them, I can't. Listen, you do you want the asset or not, or can we work it through? And many of them, what they've learned from 2008, great financial crisis, they're not taking the assets. They'll extend, pretend, but they want a higher interest rate. If your loan was at 4.5%, and now it's 6.75, whatever that number is, it's a big increase in pay. So maturity cliff is creating all kinds of pressure. Now the project can still do well, like you said, perfectly good assets with good existing leases, good tenants, hit maturity cliff. They need more capital in the form of preferred equity or whatever you want to call it, so it can extend with the bank. And that's mm-hmm. the exercise today. Can you have a conversation with the bank, say, hey, we'll bring some more money into the project, but extend me the loan? And some,
right.
if they're absolutely insane or they have a crazy agenda that they want to take the asset, they may start the foreclosure process. Who knows, right? It depends. But most banks, at least in from what I've heard from people, have significant incentives not to force into foreclosures, because foreclosures cause problems with banks, for regulators, et cetera, right?
Right.
But capital is needed. So we're just working to inject capital in the form of MS financing. Some deals, it's if the first will allow second recording, then we'll record a loan. Alternative to that, you do some kind of a private loan without it being recorded as a lien. Third, you can do preferred equity. So you can do a mix of all these capital injections depending on the structure of a deal. But the objective is still the same, is to provide the projects with liquidity to execute the business plan. So you got to make sure that the business plan is solid with solid operator. And then the financial plan has to be such that the projects can actually get to a point where you believe they can refinance with agency debt, right? If you're talking about commercial deals. So if you can refinance with agency debt, at least you're not dealing with a bridge loan interest rates versus the long-term money. And if the interest rates retreat somewhat from where they are today, the conditions may improve. That's the objective. And I hope it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do see rates coming down, but not anytime soon. It would not surprise me that it would be till 2025 before we see a rate cut.
Well, they predicted.
And we're recording right after the Fed meeting, FOMC meeting, Fed's Open Market Committee. And what they said is consistent with the past. Of course, they can change their song, but they're keeping the rates right now, based on what they said, flat. And they're still projecting 3 cuts this year.
But yeah.
What's
we'll
going to happen is, we'll see. It's just basically a matter of time, and they are not in a hurry at all. Speculation of a rate cut as early as March originally, which didn't happen, right? Then you go into May, then you go into June. Now people are saying the first rate cut will be in July. We don't know, but we're stuck with these rates. And even if it's the first rate cut a quarter, what difference is it going to make? It's going to be very little, almost no impact. It's a symbolic move where they do it. At least it'll feel like they started to cut. But for now, that has been pushed back. At least this is the way I understand what's happening.
And it depends on how the media spins it, too, because if they you know, spin that like they do all this political garbage, they could spawn more sales, people buying houses, because even a 0.25% cut would make people start looking again. But, you know, I think, too, that people just need to get used to the new normal. You know, rates were too low, actually. And this is the new normal. I mean, I remember getting a 7% interest rate for an investment property. I was thrilled to be able to get a 7% rate. And because it was just so much higher, this was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. Now, you know, people saying, oh, that's too high. I'm like, please, that's incredible for a long term.
The adjustment from ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, to these normal, let's just call it the new normal rates. It's a hard adjustment. It takes retraining of the mind, retraining of the purse, right? Of the computations on what the mortgages cost, right? And then ultimately for commercial, so residential, we talked about residential, because of limited supply, the prices are holding up, right? Affordability has been hurt, but the pricing seems to be holding up because of this of the supply chain disbalance. But on the commercial side, we've got there's some adjustments in valuations and prices. When you push the cost of money up so much and you tighten the credit, and all other things being equal, the prices come down. I mean, this is what happened. A lot of assets.
It has to.
And ultimately, with inflation over time, as rents climb, these valuations will come back up. But the shock is still here in the system. And then how long did it take to clear the shock? It's still, you know, your guess is as good as mine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Appreciate your wisdom. Great episode as always. Love you guys. And what's the best way folks can reach out to you to learn more about Carolina Capital, Carolina Hard Money, what you're doing, and your steady Eddie simple way of business?
So on the loan side, it's carolinahardmoney.com. On the fund side, it's carolina.fund.
And you can get
Carolina
to either.
Fund. That's new. I haven't heard that. I guess .fund is a new domain. Interesting.
Yes, it is.
Carolina.fund. Well, that's wonderful. I need to do the same thing. Maybe I should have something like that for what we do.
Yeah, BigMike.fund.
Yeah, BigMike.fund is a perfect one to buy. In fact, if you don't get it, I'm going to go get it and I'll sell it to you.
You know, I'm going to run right now and go daddy, and I'm going to check it right now. Like, literally, right now after the episode. Thank you, guys.
Mike, thank you so much for having us on. We really appreciate
pleasure.
It. It was so good to see you again. We missed you.
Likewise. Miss you guys. Enjoy the spring.
Thanks. You too. Thanks.
See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.